Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. He's that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you if Odell Beckham Jr. is trying to force his way out of New York.
And if Tom Brady just took a shot at Patrick Mahomes. But we start off every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, Big Dog?
I got Drew Brees. Mr. Brees is why football is America's greatest game.
Testify.
Drew Brees embodies what makes football superior to basketball. Drew Brees is why I'm very defensive about the game some people in this country want to define and diminish as toxically masculine. Football is America's circus, come one, come all. Drew Brees is the NFL Statue of Liberty, a symbol of hope and opportunity. Last night, during a blowout victory over the Washington Redskins, Brees passed Peyton Manning as the NFL's most prolific passer. Brees has thrown for more yards than any quarterback in NFL history. It's quite an accomplishment for a quarterback who entered the NFL almost two decades ago with major questions about whether his 5'11" frame would limit his effectiveness. Brees didn't win the genetics lottery. That's the beauty of football. You don't need to be 6'5" and the son of a former NFL quarterback to have historic impact on the game. Football is the most inclusive sport we have. You can be short, tall, fat, or skinny. You can be fast, slow, smart, or stupid. You can come from great wealth or great poverty. There's a position for everybody in football. And at the most important position in all the sports, take a look at this cast of characters who have played quarterback in the NFL. There's Doug Flutie, there's Drew Brees, there's Cordell Stewart, there's Peyton Manning, there's Randall Cunningham, there's Tom Brady, and there's even Jared Lorenzen. If you want to play center or forward in the NBA, you pretty much have to cash a genetics lottery ticket. That's not true in football. Hard work and a willingness to sacrifice and the ability to endure pain are the most important aspects of football, more so than in basketball. Football might not be the most fun game to play, but it's the most challenging, rewarding, entertaining, and compelling. It's the best. And Drew Brees represents everything that is right about the game. He's a hero and a role model in New Orleans. His charity work is an inspiration. He turned the big birthmark on the side of his face into a lesson for young people about accepting what makes you unique. Immediately after breaking Manning's record, Brees celebrated with his family and sounded a message to his kids that all Americans needed to hear.
How about that, huh? Yeah. How about that? Hey, I love you guys so much. Hey, you're gonna accomplish anything in life you're willing to work for, right? I love you, boys.
All right, Marcellus, you agree with me. Drew Brees represents what makes football better than all other sports.
I do. A large part of that I agree with, the all-inclusive part, the diversity. Because playing football, as you know, it will find a way for you to succeed if you do what Drew Brees just said, if you're willing to work at it. Think about how you, as a football player, by position, by quarterback, Drew Brees, can find a way even in that one position. We've heard quarterback be termed system quarterback. We've heard gunslinger. We've heard mobile. We've heard pocket passer. All inclusive. So the thing about basketball, baseball, other sports, to me, you get exposed easy in those sports. Easily you are exposed because of genetics, lottery, et cetera. Football is going to say if you do win the genetics lottery, you're in prime position. But if you don't, here's this consolation prize. Here's this other way to approach this game. Every position has it. You can look at a defensive lineman like myself. Are you an edge rusher? Are you a run stopper? Are you a two-gapper? We find ways for you to succeed because football is a great game of skill and a greater game of will. In other sports, you can half-heart it. In basketball, somebody hits you, ouch, two free throws, okay, cool times. In football, you go out there half-hearted. The next play after someone knocks your head off, you're gonna realize, do I want this or not? Obviously, Drew Brees, throughout his career, from day one, and I saw him play day one, to right now, eclipsing all these records, he wants it and he shows that will.
I think, and again, I'm a homer for football, but it's the ultimate test of will, like you said. It's the ultimate test of man. And look, people hear this when I've said this in the past. They hear it as a great shot at LeBron James. Mm. It's really not a shot at LeBron James. LeBron James won the genetics lottery, but he also has the work ethic of any of the greatest athletes of all time.
Big time.
But what I've tried to say is, you know what failure for LeBron would look like? and I've said this and people have misunderstood it, but if LeBron had been a failure, if he hadn't tried and given his best effort in basketball, he would be Michael Beasley, guy that played in the league for a long time, made $40 million.
Yeah.
I don't really care how talented you are. If you don't try in football, you're going to get hurt. You're going to be out of the league real quickly.
Yeah.
You can't fake it. You can't cut every corner and still be a money-making, competitive NFL football player. It just can't happen. There's no place to hide.
No place to hide except on the bench. And even then, that gets lonely, and then you find yourself, like you said, out of the game. It's crazy because football presents every single play a new wall that you have to run through. You can try at a younger level, at a younger age, to hop the walls, athleticism. Hey, if you're fast at age 8, you're going to be the best player on the team. I don't give a damn if you know football or not. You get to high school, if you still got those athletic talents, they will take you far, college as well. And then you hit this level. And when that wall is presented, Drew Brees, when he injures his shoulder, almost tears it off. Drew Brees, when they're saying we're going to draft at your position, there's a Phillip Rivers here. Drew Brees, when he's declined his medical evaluation and passing it with Miami. Drew Brees, when he gets to New Orleans and they're still wearing the paper bags. You have to run through those walls, and Drew Brees is a perfect example of one who does.
We're going to transition to a second layer, but I want to give you an opportunity to answer this question. It's one I've just thought of in a moment. There's a lot of comment, who's the greatest quarterback? And I think most people agree Drew Brees isn't in that debate. He's not there with Brady and Manning and some of the other guys. But when I put it to you this way, Marcellus, and when I was writing this and thinking about this last night and this morning, Drew Brees may be the football player and the quarterback I respect the most.
And that respect comes from?
Just the totality.
Yeah.
Being the undersized guy, gets hurt in San Diego, reinvents himself in New Orleans, embodies everything about New Orleans, puts together this incredible career. And what's the knock? There's no knock. There's no Make America Great hat in his locker for anybody to pick at. And I really don't have a problem with Brady for that, but some people do.
Yeah.
Drew Brees has been in this limelight for 15 to 18 years, spotless.
Yeah, and I saw him from day one. Obviously, he was drafted as a rookie when I was a San Diego Charger as well. And a lot of people want to give him tremendous respect as he deserves. But a lot of people take it too far when they say he's overachieved. I don't think that Drew Brees has overachieved. I think that the evaluation system has failed us to the point where we think this is an overachievement because we're not properly using the right scope. Now, what is that scope? To measure, like you said, his will, to measure his heart, that tenacity, and to stay out of harm's way off the field as well. Drew Brees being 5'11", but those accuracy, the way that he's so accurate and the way that he gets the ball to the proper receivers, how he diagnoses the defense. We need to find a system and a measurement that respects how guys approach the game in those capacities instead of the old traditional way, how tall you are, how far can you throw it, and you get lazy with those evaluations.
All right, well, Peyton Manning held the passing yards record for just shy of 3 years. And after Brees broke it, he sent out a special message in typical Peyton style.
Drew, for 1,000 days, I've held the record for all-time passing yards in the NFL. And I gotta tell you, it's been the greatest 1,000 days of my life. And thanks to you, that's over now, and you've ruined that for me. So thank you very much. I have nothing left to look forward to except slicing my tomatoes, making dinner for my family, putting together this wedge salad. Also, let this serve as the congratulations for the touchdown record, because as you can see, I'm very busy. I don't have time to keep doing these videos for you, congratulating you.
All right, great humorous thank you acknowledgement by Peyton. But it also raises a somewhat legitimate question when he talks about he held the record for 1,000 days. He knows Drew's going to break the touchdown passing record, he or Peyton Manning or Tom Brady at some point. And I just wonder, Marcellus, if the new rules around quarterback play in the NFL, does it diminish these passing records at all?
Oh, it absolutely does. And you have to look at these new rules and say, okay, let's respect the previous era without making the error of disrespecting these players currently and their greatness. Drew Brees is going to benefit from a receiver who can't get touched after 5 yards. He's going to benefit from a more protected pocket. But as we see these new rules occur, we're seeing these numbers get inflated to a point where if you don't dive deeper into the numbers, you're going to see things like an all-time quarterback ranking and rating. You're going to see Tony Romo fifth. And you're going to say, that's higher than Steve Young. Interesting. Then you're going to see a Kirk Cousins that's ninth. That's higher than Joe Montana. Interesting. And right behind Joe Montana is Chad Pennington and Matt Schaub. Like, these numbers are getting so inflated right now, but I don't want to make the error of not respecting greatness when I see it. And Drew Brees is greatness no matter what era that is.
You know, you said in the previous discussion about evaluating guys in the draft process differently. I almost think we're going to have to come up with a different way to evaluate great quarterback play because I think it's going to get reduced down to just Super Bowls. How many Super Bowls did you win?
Yeah, right.
And we need – I don't know if it's touchdowns to interceptions because guys are throwing a lot less interceptions now. I don't know how – I don't know what the stat is or what the key measure – maybe it's third down efficiency. I don't know. But I just don't think Matt Stafford, I think, is on pace to eventually be the all-time passer yards leader. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be hard to put him in the same category as Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, the people that have held this, Fran Tarkin, the people that have held this record previously. We're going to have to look for a new measurement and a way to evaluate these quarterbacks because it has been made so comfortable in the pocket. No one has to have any the kind of fear you used to have when you played from the pocket. I don't know. I legitimately don't know. I'm at a loss how we're going to statistically evaluate quarterbacks in the future moving forward.
And you know what? That's not on us. The deeper dive into analytics and all that progression, where that's heading, it happened in baseball, and it's happened in baseball where you talk about batting average. And you used to sit around at the sports bar and say somebody batting average. Oh, man, he's good. And then somebody's like, what's his OPS? You're like, what'd you just say? You know, UPS. Like, you don't even understand where they're coming from. We have to take a deeper dive into these numbers. I think we're on track to realizing in the transition of eras, there has to be a deeper number than just touchdowns, just interceptions. You have to look at a Drew Brees and say, with that accuracy, which is the best all time, he can play anywhere. But then you have to look at some of these other guys, a Chad Pennington sitting there right by a Joe Montana in some major statistical category and say, that's a problem. We have to take a deeper dive.
The fall's most kick-ass new drama is about to kick off. Wednesday, October 10th, the highly anticipated new series All American premieres on the CW. Suspense and superhero mastermind Greg Berlanti, producer of massive hits like Riverdale and Black Lightning, is now about to kill it in the sports genre as well. Inspired by local football hero Spencer Paysinger, All American is about a high school football phenom from South Central who gets recruited to play in Beverly Hills. Tay Diggs crushes it as Beverly High football coach Billy Baker, a former star player in his own right who sees himself in Spencer. Coming off two losing seasons, he also sees Spencer as a ticket to job security. Billy promises Spencer the chance to someday go pro and give his family a better life. The relationship between a coach and a player who each have everything to lose is the driving force behind some pretty intense drama, both good and bad. If you could draft a fantasy football team for fall TV, All American would be in a league of its own. Catch the series premiere of All American Wednesday, October 10th on the CW.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, it's time for Big Stories. Let's start in New York, where the Giants are still dealing with the fallout from Odell Beckham Jr.'s Sunday interview where he let his frustrations with Eli Manning slip out. Even still, Manning says it's all good, and he even called Odell smart and big for taking responsibility for his actions. But not everyone thinks things are hunky-dory in New York, with Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio writing, quote, Odell's interview is a strange and bizarre development for a player who signed a new contract in August that included a $20 million signing bonus and $65 million in guarantees. If he wanted out, and apparently he does, Beckham could have done a lot of other things than take the team's money. There's also a chance that this is part of Beckham's strategy with the goal of getting paid by the Giants and then forcing a trade elsewhere. Marcellus, does Odell want out of New York?
No, Hell no. I mean, you just said it yesterday. You're talking about how Odell's a brand. So respecting how great he is, especially outside the game, having the highest shoe deal in Nike football history, you got to respect a guy who wants to stay in New York and finish what he built there, which was all-time greatness, certainly after his first 3 years. But Odell is stuck because Odell wants to say what he can't say, which is, I want to stay in New York, but I want somebody else to leave. And that is Eli Manning. One, y'all told me he was going to retire. That didn't happen. Fine. And then I saw and witnessed with a front row seat, y'all benched Eli for football reasons. You should have benched Eli. He was sorry. And then for non-football reasons and backlash and criticism, don't you dare touch the legacy of Eli Manning, two-time Super Bowl MVP. And Odell is sitting there now talking to Josina Anderson and lying through his teeth because he wants to say, I'm fine if you give me the right resources, but I'm not and I can't say it. So he starts off answers with, I don't know. I know, Odell, you want Eli out of town.
You're 1,000% correct. This is about pushing Eli out, starting a conversation about we're done with Eli. And what he knows is, again, he doesn't want to go through this next year if he's around. Go out, get me a young quarterback. Look what Baker Mayfield and some of these rookie quarterbacks are doing very early on. Sam Darnold right there with the Jets right there in New York. Yeah. Mahomes is in his second year. And so I think he looks around and says, man, I need to, if I'm going to live up to my full potential, I need a quarterback in his prime, or I need one of these old dudes that's playing like they're in their prime, and I don't have that with Eli. And so he's putting the heat on Eli. Eli's either going to have to step up his play, or Eli may get benched again this year for whatever. I don't even know who their second or third string guy is, but Odell wants the Eli era over.
Yeah, and look, I think he's learning from his good friend, and a guy he
Little
worked
Wayne?
Out with.
Oh, no.
I think. Carter Five in the same. First of all, let's go there. Dez Bryant, all those workout videos? Oh, guess what happens when you work out with a dude? Y'all go get some lunch, and y'all start chopping it up. And you know what happened? Dez is now a retired football player, in part because of his own doing, but in part because he went through the Dak Prescott transition from Tony Romo and didn't say enough about that. And now...
You lost me with the Dez.
Oh, here we go. So Dan Dez is like, hey, bro, when it's not you, make sure they know it's not you. And this is Odell saying, it's not me, y'all. And I don't hear enough because of the protected legacy of Eli, enough criticism of Eli. So he's trying to point it at Eli.
All right, to a big story in the NBA where Lonzo Ball is set to return from injury tomorrow night, which got LeBron hyped on Instagram, posting, quote, It's about that time, young king. Let's get it. You were born for this moment. Lonzo will be coming off the bench tomorrow and maybe longer, with LeBron saying he expects Ball to absolutely have an impact on the Lakers' second unit. All right, Marcellus, I think Lonzo coming off the bench, his destiny, it's going to set off LeVar Ball.
LeVar? Where'd that come from? Where'd that curveball come from? Kershaw in
the mouth of South Central.
You ain't lying. First of all, LeBron, man, skipping college, man. Young king. Isn't that called a prince? Like, LeBron wants everybody to be a king. Like, it's called Prince. He's coming. Last time we heard from LeVar Ball, you got to flip the calendar. It's been a long time, man. It sounds like we miss him because we're bringing him up in this situation. No, LeVar Ball is not going to speak up. No, LeVar Ball is
not going to be cool with his son coming off the bench.
Yeah. You know why? Because he respects the gatekeepers. That is one LeBron James and one Magic Johnson. So the way to get in there to cause some ruckus is to respect who's sitting there saying you can or cannot come in. He is not disrespecting this franchise. It is no longer the 25-win and 35-win Lakers. This team is for real.
You are saying that LeVar has actually matured and grown up, because I haven't known him to respect anybody or anything. He took on Nike and damn near everybody with Big Baller Brand. We're going to change the world. And now
he believed that
Magic and LeBron, he's backing down to those guys.
No, I think he's always been tongue in cheek. First of all, the whole mouth for South Central. Yeah, that's everybody's uncle that got to the barbecue before you, had five before you got there, and then you sitting there like, what's wrong with Unc? Unc is on one, because Unc knows I was playing the short game. Let me get this attention, and I'm gonna use that attention, monetize it, start my brand, get my my boy out there and have him be the second overall pick, but talked about more than even the number one overall pick. It worked. Now he's playing the long game. That's why we haven't heard from him. The long game is to do all the deals that he's doing under the table, closed mouth, away from the cameras, and then let his boy properly mature, because Magic told him, I got you, I got your son, but let us get this. I think he's going
to
respect it.
And maybe Magic said, I got you, your son's going to come off the bench, he's going to play 15 to 17 minutes. You know, we taking his jersey out of the rafters. You know, I put it up there when we drafted him. We taking it out of the rafter. He's a role player now.
What?
That can't shoot. We spent all summer trying to fix his shot, and we can't. He's going to have a big impact on that second unit, playing with Josh Hart and whoever. Who's on their bench? I can't even remember.
All of them.
Lance Stevenson.
Yeah, right.
JaVale McGee.
All of them.
You're going to have a big impact on those guys. And also, you know, your second son, we couldn't even look at him in training camp. He was garbage.
Hey, they didn't work out, though.
Your third son is over there starting fights in Lithuania or whatever.
That's not
LeVar's
it.
LeVar's been humbled.
Hey, that's part of the process of growth. You know, LeBron got humbled. Don't ask the Dallas Mavericks about LeBron James. They're going to say, we humbled the young man.
All right, let's move to a final big story from the UFC, where Conor McGregor's loss to Khabib Nurmagomedov over the weekend is prompting speculation that the Irish superstar's future. While Conor has already called for a rematch, USA Today says the loss puts him on a path to professional wrestling, much like Ronda Rousey. Marcellus, should Conor move on from the UFC and MMA?
Yeah, it's about that time, big dog. Check your watches. It's ticking on it, because he's the biggest star in the sport. Undoubtedly the biggest star in the sport. And he seemed like he's outgrown the sport. Think about what he's had to do in the last couple of years as being the biggest star. He's jumped weight classes 3 times. So he's looking to squeeze the juice out of the UFC wherever there is juice. And then he's also jumped sport to go fight a Floyd Mayweather to try and squeeze some juice, because there's not enough nutrients and star quality in the UFC. So this is a guy who's like, what's left here and what's next for me? Now, the UFC is buttering his bread. So respect the UFC for what they have built in terms of his brand and in terms of his exposure. But you tell me, somebody tell me that's genius in this sport. What is next for Conor McGregor? Because it doesn't look satisfying.
Yeah, I think they should have just cut to the chase here, though. This, to me, Marvin Hagler explained all this. You know, this dude is sleeping in silk pajamas.
Mm-hmm.
And to get up and do the work that it takes to compete with a Khabib, to compete with anybody in UFC, it took Conor 2 years to get back in the octagon.
Yeah.
He made that $100 million with Floyd, and all of his pajamas turned to silk. And it's hard to get up out of bed and do that work. And again, when he goes, if he goes and checks the tape, or if he just starts checking his head right now for them bruises that Khabib put on him, he does not want to do that kind of work anymore. It's so different from the fighters. And I know this is MMA and UFC, but it's so different than the boxing game, where a fight or a big purse used to be $1 million.
Okay.
You can spend $1 million real quick.
Quick. You got 600,000 after you blink. You're like, where'd that go?
And so I just think when you make $100 million like now, that takes a lot of the thirst away. If Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran and Marvin Hagler had fought during this era, you know, they might have fought 20 times in their entire career. Yeah. It's just like a UFC guy, or particularly Conor, the money he's made, if he's fought 25, 30 times in the UFC, yeah, it's time to move on.
Yeah, think about it. What's left in the UFC? Either you face whatever stars are left, but that means now that's a great fighter. That guy, Khabib, the stars are great. You don't want to do that in those silk pajamas. Or they're not as great. That means they don't have star quality. That means we're not interested as consumers. So he's really in a dilemma of, like, I don't know which way to play this. So I think maybe a transition to a different entertainment scope and something easier on the body is smart.
All right, welcome back.
Oh, man.
Patrick Mahomes and Marcellus Wiley here. I'm Jason Whitlock. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings.
Who are you?
Let's move to Tom. I thought we were talking about Patrick Mahomes. Oh, we're going to talk about Tom Brady's comments about Mahomes.
Look at you.
Brady's gearing up for a matchup with the greatest quarterback in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, and the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. Brady couldn't escape questions about this year's breakout superstar quarterback, the greatest quarterback of all time. Brady says Mahomes has been, quote, impressive He also put the brakes on comparisons to his own rookie year.
Football was different then. You know, I think now pro football is more of glorified college football. So I think in some ways it's the transition. It's a more similar game than what it used to be, you know, when I first started. I think football now is, you know, with removing some of the physical elements of the game, it's more of a space game. And, you know, you see a lot of kind of college plays, you know, more in the pro game now than what I remember when I started.
I hate to say this, but that little hater in the house, I think. I mean, I think his comments are accurate. Mm. The game has changed. Mm. But why you got to say it this week? Mm. You could have said that last week. You could have said it last year. The rules have been changing. I love Tom Brady, but, I mean, this is some shade being thrown here at Patrick Mahomes, and I don't understand.
Look at you talking in third person. How you going to say, oh, Patrick Mahomes? Look at you. Looking like Turbo on Beach Street more than anything. I ain't mad at you, though. You look good. This is full-out black buckshot. Like, this is not even like a veiled shot. This is like, no, in scope, where are you? Pow, shot at Patrick Mahomes because our job is to talk about era differences and, oh, how do you talk about this guy in one generation versus another generation? Not you, the player. But he gave him his props, and then he was like, back up. Stop this comparison stuff right now, and I know what you guys are doing. And it's interesting. This takes me back mentally. When you saw LeBron James play against Steph Curry, this was, what, 2 years ago in the finals? It was a dead ball situation, and LeBron had gotten tired of everyone saying, ooh, Steph's the new king. And it was a dead ball. And Steph Curry tried to go up for a shot. LeBron went, yeah, smacked that ball, looked at him, and dog cursed him right in that moment. Like, stay back, and everyone else stay aware. I'm still the king. I think we saw that right there with Tom Brady.
I think it's a little shade, but rightfully so. I mean, go ahead. He's that old dog, just like all of us sitting up here. We all look back now at the league, and we're saying it's soft. The rules have changed. Football is not what it used to be. There's people, even ex-players, are saying football's not even going to be around in 10 years because it's getting so soft now and it's getting so easy. So I kind of agree with that. I don't think football's going to end, but absolutely, he's throwing a little shade, and he should. Let it be known that, look, this game is way different. This is not what he – look at Michael Jordan when he talks about someone like Steph Curry. Steph Curry couldn't play in our day. That would never, ever happen. Mm. And it's true. It's different. Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill going over the middle. Rodney Harris isn't there anymore. John Lynch is not there anymore. You're not getting blasted. It's a different game. It's a lot more comfortable. And you can make plays. You can come in football ready now, young guys. And I don't have a problem with it. I'm with you.
I agree with all of you. I think he's throwing shade. But when you are constantly asked about someone who is thriving, who is becoming the next best thing, you get tired of answering those questions. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, am I going to show him some love? Yes, he's great. He's been able to do some great things. But then I'm going to throw some shots as well. But my only problem with it is it benefits Patrick Mahomes when his offense tailors around him. So for Tom Brady to say, yeah, the offenses are more college-driven now. Yeah, you tailor it to your quarterback situation. Just like Tom Brady, we don't see them running a lot of bootlegs and nakeds and getting him out the pocket. They tailor that offense in New England to Tom Brady. So don't be mad at what they're doing out there.
I'm going to give you one other little piece that I think is involved in here. Is there is some jealousy, and it's jealousy about Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Kareem Hunt, and Andy Reid. Mm. He's got every piece that Tom Brady's like, I don't have all them pieces. Gronk's hurt half the time. Julian Edelman's been suspended. We just signed Josh Gordon out of a rehab facility. you know, he's like, and this guy has everything. And then the last thing is, I think, and again, it's a little shot at Patrick Mahomes, but I think it's more of a shot at all the rookie quarterbacks that are having instant success earlier on. He's saying, and again, that's what he's talking about, you can just come in and install the little college system they played in, and they can have success in this league.
Yeah, it's amazing when you see from generation to generation, we all hold on to our highlights of our generation, whether it's in music. Oh, our music is the best, and my parents said the same thing, and now these kids are saying the same thing.
Or, our music was better back then.
See, once again, you're proving my point, old man.
No, it is.
But the thing is, this is the old baked potato. Remember, we had to wait 45 minutes for that baked potato. Had to stab it, Reynolds wrap all on it. You're waiting 2 days for a baked potato. Then these kids, like 5 minutes in the microwave. It doesn't taste the same, but guess what? It's like that instantaneous success. And he's like, it's impressive, but let me tell you the grind I went through to get here. He may catch up in numbers, but don't put him on the same level. I think Brady's already taking a shot at that.
All right, let's move to Oakland, where John Gruden's return to the sidelines isn't exactly going according to plan. The Raiders are 1-4 after a loss to the Chargers Sunday, and Gruden says Derek Carr may be trying to do too much.
I think he'll tell you. He's just trying. He's just trying so hard. But I think he just presses in some moments, and he knows we have to do a lot with the ball when we have it. And I think that's what happened today.
All right, a few years ago, Carr was the NFL's next big thing, but now he's leading the league in interceptions. Carr even has more than Jags, Blake Bortles. All right, I think Derek Carr is a talented quarterback. He's playing for the wrong head coach. I think John Gruden is a micromanager, and unless you're Brad Johnson and very limited and go out there and be a robot, I think it's hard to play for John Gruden. And, you know, I got a little bit of a bias. He ran off Jeff George, a guy I grew up with out of Oakland after the guy had a tremendous 29 TD, 9 interception year the year before. John Gruden's just very hard. He wants to control the quarterback, and I think Derek Carr's cracking under that pressure.
I hear Rich Gannon disagreeing with you right now because he was just floating around there. He got some John Gruden in his life, and things changed drastically. That said, I look at John Gruden, and he's doing a proper assessment of his young quarterback. He's trying to make him unlearn some bad habits, and he's also trying to tell him what we've all heard. Try easy. Don't try hard. Try easy. Now, like, stay within yourself, but give maximum effort. That's it. This 110%, stop with that falseness because it's making you make bad decisions. So last year, under a coach that I love that I played for, Jack Del Rio, he was actually worse. Look at Derek Carr last year versus this year. He was a worse quarterback last year. It's amazing that we're giving Gruden all this criticism. In reality, he's made him better in every category except the one he's trying to correct, which is the interceptions, which is coming from the intensity and try hard that's coming from Derek Carr. So all things considered, Derek Carr has to be happy he has a John Gruden in his life.
Yeah, I don't blame John Gruden for his struggles. You put up last year's numbers, but that holds true for his career. His numbers this year are better than his entire career, with the exception of the
game's easier.
You can say that, but as far as productivity, you still got to produce, and his completion percentage is higher. I think the number one thing, the takeaway that I listen to when I hear that soundbite, John Gruden says we have to do a lot with the ball when we got it. Basically, our defense isn't stopping anybody, so it's all on us. This is what John Gruden does.
Yeah.
He focuses on one side of the ball, offense. You had Khalil Mack. You let him go. You focused. You talked and praised Derek Carr. This is the next best thing. I love this young quarterback. He's good. He's great. He's this. Now he's throwing too many picks because he knows the pressure is on me. I have to do it all.
No, you know what? John Gruden is such he's a polarizing guy. I mean, you take a poll. Most people, either you like him or you don't like him. I think you don't like him for reason.
I've praised John early in the year. I've watched some of their games where I thought he made a difference. I think he's just particularly hard on a quarterback, like Larry Brown and point guards in the NBA. Larry Brown got the best out of them. I'm not sure if John Gruden always gets the best out of his quarterback.
Well, in this day and age, with a guy like Derek Carr, and this is where we have to ask ourselves, how good do we think Derek Carr really is? I mean, is he a top 15 quarterback? Is he a top 20 quarterback? Where does he rank in your rankings in the NFL quarterbacks? He should be putting up better numbers. I agree. I think all these quarterbacks, if you're not putting up at least 250 yards a week, then something is wrong, especially in this day and age. That's the way I judge quarterbacks from here on out. Agreed. What we saw last night with Drew Brees, you see what he did, 250 yards in the first half. That's what one of the all-time best can do. So I would expect these young quarterbacks in this 7-on-7 league that we have now to be able to put up better numbers. And Derek Carr, he's got to play better than this because otherwise they're paying him a lot of money right now.
Yeah.
And he's definitely not footing the bill for what they're paying him.
And it's interesting if you really want to be fully transparent. I think he's given us kind of like an understanding of the psychological makeup of Derek Carr. And it's interesting, if you look at him, he seems wound too tight. Now, what does that mean? That means in pressure moments, and I went to the Chargers game, and they were down on the goal line, and I'm like, whoa, they're about to score, and this place is about to erupt, and it's going to be a game. And Derek Carr just aimlessly ran around and just threw it into the breadbasket of Melvin Ingram, and next thing you know, he's running the other way. The point of that is, I think he's saying he's trying too hard. This has nothing to do with his talent. This has nothing to do with him doing the plays that I called. This has nothing to do with the X's and O's. This is about the I's and the U's. And it's crazy, one of our assessments as a defender, I remember getting a game plan that had Peyton Manning, and one page is always pros, one page is cons. And I was like, ain't gonna be nothing on the con page. This Peyton Manning, he's amazing. It said, in tight situations, will give you the ball back. In tight situations, may break down. You're like, what? And then you saw that play out in playoff moments time and time again. A Clayton Kershaw comes to mind. Amazing normally. Get him in those critical moments, World Series, whatever. You're like, a little too tightly wound. I think this is the first step of John Gruden letting us know
who's
that.
Who's winding him up, though? Who's tightening? Who's making him more tight? It may be the guy looking over his shoulder, second-guessing everything. Sometimes when you're that quarterback guru, maybe you're trying too hard as well as a coach.
But he's playing better. To your point, to my point, to the numbers point, that would make sense if he weren't playing better by the numbers. I don't understand that part.
And I also think sometimes you can get so caught into going to your go-to guy, and right now Jared Cook is clearly his go-to guy. Yeah. He has Amari Cooper. He has Jordy Nelson. He has Bryant. He has weapons around him, but he's getting locked into one guy. And when teams start to see you have a tendency, they start taking that away, and that's when you start throwing them the ball back.
I don't know if we got time for this.
No, we don't.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings are back. Let's move to Dallas, where Jason Garrett's decision to punt on 4th-and-1 during Sunday's overtime loss to the Texans is still raising eyebrows. Jerry Jones initially second-guessed Garrett's decision, but today he tried to backtrack and throw his coach some support.
I don't want to second guess that call. There really are good arguments on both sides of the ball about what to do or not to do there. And we know how it works. If it pans out for you, then you get a lot of pats on the back. And if it doesn't, then that's what you're paid to do, make those hard calls.
I'm not buying it.
Oh.
Jerry's backtracking because he already lit the fire the day before.
Yes, he did.
And so now he's stepping out of it. Jason Witten piled on during the Monday Night Football broadcast. Jerry Jones has lost some confidence in Jason Garrett. He's not going to make a move, I don't think, during the season. But Jason Garrett is playoff a bust now. I think Jerry's lost some faith in him.
I think this proves that Jason Garrett has power, the power that no one gives him credit for, the power to grab his owner, Jerry Jones, and say, I need you to walk that back. You know why you need to walk that back? One, you're wrong, and I'm going to give you the flip side of this coin. And two, look how you're making this more than what it was. This was as simple as all football plays are. There's a decision to make, and there's a result. And we cannot sit there and get caught up in all the results when the decision was sound. So, to me, if I'm looking at this situation, like, he's showing a little love to his coach, who actually has some power when he brought him back and when the emotions.
I don't want you anywhere near a coach of my football team if you think that was a good decision.
to what you're saying, you think Jason Garrett has power?
Oh, I got you on the fence a little, huh? No, say what you were going to say.
Going to say what I'm going to say. No, I believe this.
You want my Twitter off, Greg? No. Spray him down.
Hey, yeah, I need that right now, man. Yeah, let me get that.
What you know I'm hot over here.
When I look at Jerry Jones, no, he's not in support of Jason Garrett. I want you to do what I want you to do. That's why I have you in this position. He's always been that puppet type coach. Woo. And when I disagree with you, that's what I'm going to do. But when I realize what I've said may cause some issue, and I understand I don't want to be a distraction, which Jerry Jones often is the distraction and the distractor, he has to walk it back. But Jason Garrett's decision, in my opinion, it was the right decision. Their defense was playing a lot better than their offense. You can pull that Twitter off.
6 yards a play.
Look, let me tell you.
Don't get confused.
No. When you rush the ball 20 times and you gain 54 yards and you get stuffed the play before for a half yard less, Like, you're not going to have the confidence in your offense. I don't care how much you're making.
Greg Jennings, please respect and listen to this one question. And I hope I pose that as a question because I don't really want to hear your answer. But listen to this. When in life have you ever supported someone after the fact when you know that person was wrong and they're powerless? When would you ever walk something back on someone who you say is a puppet and they were wrong? Please answer now.
You told me not to answer.
Okay.
So I'm get, Tony got
hey, he's only listening to you. Nah, it's fine. You can answer if you want.
You know, this whole Jerry Jones, I mean, you have to sit here and laugh. I mean, going on a show in the middle of the season, the distractions. Anyway, I still can't even comprehend that. But this is who Jerry Jones is. Mm. He's always in the media. He's like that crazy old man out there just talking to talk. Is he backtracking? Yeah, he's backtracking. Does Garrett have power there? Something is going on.
Something.
Because his record since he's been there, I mean, 8-8, one playoff win for America's team, the stuff it's not cutting it. And for whatever reason, Jerry wants to keep him around because he can do stuff like this. Bill Belichick wouldn't go for this.
Yeah.
Do you think so? You think great coaches would go for it? Andy Reid would go for this? He would be like, I'm out of here. He wouldn't even take that job because you deal with Jerry. I just don't know if he's stuck with Garrett. Garrett's not going anywhere, and I don't think Jerry's going to get somebody else in there. Who's going to put up with Jerry's stuff during the season like this? You don't need this stuff. You're trying to win a football game.
You don't break up with your boyfriend or girlfriend until you have a replacement, and maybe Jerry doesn't have a replacement in mind who can be better than Jason Garrett. But I can guarantee you this. If they miss the playoffs this year, and Jason Garrett has been the head coach for 8.5 seasons at the end of this season, and during 7 of those seasons, they won't have made the playoffs. The dude is getting fired. Whether Jerry, you can find anybody. You could do what he's doing.
Who's going to come in there? Who's going to take that job? What big time coach is going to want to come in there and deal with Jerry going on the radio
and
twice a week?
Sean Payton.
That's the thing. You have to be a puppet because Jerry.
No. Tell me this. Honestly, you think Sean McVay, if you roll the clock back, he's a Washington assistant. You think if Jerry offers him the Cowboys job, he says, nah, I'm on a pass.
Maybe.
No.
For opportunity at 30? At 30, yeah.
Yes, you take
America's
that job.
America's team, you take that job, right?
Right. And yeah, so if Jerry can identify the next young coach a Kyle Shanahan, who knows who it is, and go identify that guy, someone will take that job, and he'll have a chance to do a better job than what Jason Garrett is doing. That decision was stupid. I can't believe that you two agree with it. Do you agree with that 4th-and-1 punt?
No, he should have went for it.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't see. You're on that side of the field. Go for it.
I agree with you guys. He should have went for it. That said,
no.
He did something from that moment to Jerry Jones opening his mouth saying, now there is another side to this story. That shows some power there.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. All right, Greg Jennings is still here. As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Columbia's very own Marcellus Wiley. So we're going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look into some big issues in the sports world. Darnell, bring out Marcellus's cap. I'm sorry you have to sit through this, Greg.
Greg.
The guy's ego's
well deserved, well earned.
I'm sure. I want to check the transcripts at Columbia.
Do not. See if you ask. Don't do that. Point one.
All right, let's move to the NFL, where Odell Beckham Jr. is back to his old ways, doing an interview this week with Lil Wayne by his side, where he vented his frustrations with the Giants. From where I sit, Odell is a victim of his own stardom, with his need to be a brand taking precedence over his needs to be a performer on the football field. It's a trend that appears to be growing across sports, and not just among superstars like Odell. Last night, after the Redskins corner Josh Norman was benched during a loss to the Saints, our buddy D'Angelo Hall said his former teammate cares more about being a celebrity than being a football player. And that is where our conversation begins, because it is something that I believe. I think that all the focus on being a brand and being more than just an athlete, and I say that knowing that's something LeBron James believes in, I think it diminishes and hurts guys on the field.
Well, brands can coexist with success. As a matter of fact, the main ingredient of any brand is that same success. You have to ball before you become a brand. Brands don't walk into the locker room and say, raise your hand if you want to be a brand. No, they hand pick and select the guys who are out there doing the next level in terms of performance and greatness. So
you mean Kaepernick? He was doing next level performance. That's why he's one of the biggest brands in sports.
Kaepernick is different in this respect. And you're saying guys who are active chasing a brand, and Kaepernick is not active, so he's not chasing a brand.
But what I was saying about Kaepernick, even because, again, I started out the biggest Kaepernick fan there was.
Yeah.
And I saw him as a player start chasing the brand, even when he was playing well. The Beats by Dre and all that stuff became more important, and living up to that brand became more important than football.
But why does Beats by Dre all of a sudden make you chase a brand, but when we're wearing Nikes, we're not chasing a brand? Everything we're wearing is something that's licensed and paid for, and someone's making money if we're not making money. And if you're just a normal player, I'm sorry, you get the catalog for free, and you just get the shoe contract. But if you are the man, we put a billboard up and pay you, and you still wear the shoes. So it's just a perception issue in that respect.
It is a perception, because the reality of how it works is you don't chase the brand. The brand chases you. Like Marcellus, when you ball, they will call. They will come searching out for you. So you talk about Colin Kaepernick. If he wasn't performing, you think Beats by Dre is going to pick up the phone and say, hey, you want to be endorsed by us? We want you to be the spokesman for our... No, absolutely not. You look at LeBron James, everything that he does, he understands, if I am not the number one player on the hardwood, none of what I'm doing even matters. It's not even as relevant.
Right.
But if I remain relevant on the court, if I constantly have everybody believing and knowing I'm the number one player that puts this ball through this hoop, everything that I do is heightened. It draws more awareness because of my performance.
I think that here in this modern era, because of social media, I think things have changed. I think players have figured out and many have focused on post-career life. And I think they transitioned to that a lot earlier than athletes used to. And I think a lot of their focus, and again, so I think what Kaepernick did was when his career started falling apart, I think he became more brand conscious and reinvented himself as a different brand. I think other athletes have seen this. And I think that it's inviting or enticing. And so when I look at Odell Beckham Jr., when he's sitting next to Lil Wayne doing an interview, that has nothing to do with football. That has everything to do with about his brand. I run with the coolest people in all of pop culture, and even when I'm doing a football interview, Justin Bieber or Lil Wayne or somebody sitting next to me, and it's not a football thought, it's not a football action. And so I go back into the godfather of all sports brands. To me, it's Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan.
And Michael Jordan, whether we liked it or not, he was the guy that just said, you know what, I'm going to be the greatest basketball player, and my entire brand is going to be built around that.
Revisionist history, because in the moment, Michael Jordan was representing Nike and going through the same steps. We didn't have the same intel. We didn't have the same optics. We didn't have the same understanding of the details, social media. But yes. Michael Jordan was wearing Nike to the fullest and making decisions.
No, I get that.
Right, and so here's the thing. I'm going to give you success stories, and I'm going to see how brand is misrepresented in a lot of respects, and I think you should respect all brands, like you said, because they don't come until you are actually a difference maker. You said Michael Jordan, greatest brand ever and the greatest player ever. So Drew Brees last night set the record. You know Drew Brees is a brand. Drew Brees is selling community, as he should, New Orleans, as he should. And even in the moment where he had a personal record, he pointed to everyone else because that's his brand. I am a common person. I'm under 6 feet. I'm one of you guys who just happens to throw for all these yards. TB12 in 2016 was established. You know what Tom Brady has done since 2016, chasing his brand? Been to 2 Super Bowls and won an MVP at a tender age of 40. You can chase a brand and it can work. And you can chase a brand and it cannot work. But overarching, we shouldn't damn someone who's chasing the brand.
I want to respond to that before you jump in, Greg. It's just, I think that Jordan, Breeze, Tom Brady are doing things consistent with their brand that have to do with dominance on the field. I see other athletes from Antonio Brown to Odell Beckham Jr. They're not, it's not about athletic greatness. It's not about being the best player and having team performance. It's a lot of, hey, look at me stuff. And so, again, when I'm talking about Odell, from the boat party to running around with Justin Bieber to Lil Wayne being at the interview, I'm seeing a lot of athletes over social media and just in any way possible just basically trying to draw attention to themselves that has nothing to do with athletic greatness or being on brand as a great football player and or basketball player. I just see what Jordan, Breeze, Brady, I see it a little different than what I'm seeing from the modern
Jordan
day.
And Space Jam was a little different, huh? I mean, he wasn't in the monsoons or whatever.
Come on, me, man. It starts, I'm going to take you back to when you enter into an NFL locker room.
Yep.
You go into this meeting, you go into this locker room, there's a player development guy.
Mm-hmm.
His job is to develop you mentally for life after football. Already, no, when you first sit down in that locker room, they promote life after football. This isn't it, guys.
Yeah.
So make sure you use this platform to advance yourself with relationships, networking opportunities, brands, company, all these different things. So guys have taken this idea and run with it. Even guys who aren't the number one guys.
No question.
So this is what we all see 30 for 30. We see what when guys don't take advantage of these resources and these networking opportunities and they waste their money away or they don't have other avenue streams where they have income coming in constantly. No one wants to deal with that. No one wants to go through what we see, what's out there and what's been before us. We want to learn from that. So yes, some guys do chase the brand prematurely and they don't sustain and continue with the same work ethic as your LeBron James, your Drew Breeses, your Michael Jordans, your TB12. They don't because that starts to mean more to them than what it really is that matters, and that's the game. What allowed those brands to even present themselves?
And beyond brands, it's the people. You keep talking about Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne's not doing an interview with the fourth receiver for the Cardinals.
Right.
He's doing an interview with Odell Beckham Jr. because by the year three of his career, he was an all-time great
and
in terms of his success.
I'm glad we circled back to Odell Beckham Jr. Yeah. because that's really who I'm talking about. And I think D'Angelo Hall makes a great point about Josh Norman in terms of I think D'Angelo's position is, and this is a former teammate, mm-hmm. the guy's more in love with celebrity and things off the field than being a player right now. And that's probably going to shorten his career. It's certainly going to shorten his time as a starter with the Washington Redskins. But back to Odell. Odell is one of these special, special talents that could be at a Jerry Rice level, a Michael Jordan level, consistently. He's got to win Marcellus.
Well, first of all, he put up his numbers to be in that conversation.
I got he's got the numbers.
And then Eli is trying to take that back.
3 years worth of numbers is not equivalent. And so I'm saying if he's cutting corners 3 and 4 years into his career and already focused more on being a brand than football dominance, that's not
the Is this the week to say it when he has his best game and he inspired and galvanized them to have their best game this year?
Are they playing grenades? They were close to winning. Well, they're playing horseshoes.
Okay, let's get back to Odell since we ain't talking about the Giants. 8 for 131, drew a touchdown, caught a touchdown. Like, you
dropped
gotta,
a touchdown pass.
Yeah, yeah, and it could have been 8 created been 9 distra- for 200.
Created a distraction for his team.
We know who Odell is on the field. I'm going to go back to what you said. Lil Wayne ain't sitting down with Sterling Shepard. He not sitting down.
That's
with
not the issue.
No, what you have to understand, these guys want to be associated with the faces of the NFL, the faces of sport Greatness. As well. It's not so much just that the players want to be associated with celebrities and entertainers. It's mutual.
Yeah.
And you don't really understand.
So let me ask you this. When Lil Wayne puts out the Carter Six, is he going to ask Odell to do a guest verse? on it? Or is he going to say, no, this is where I make my money. This is my business. No, Odell, you ain't qualified.
Very true.
So he's bringing Lil Wayne into his business.
Lil Wayne is not a big feature artist. He doesn't do a lot of features.
Well, why do we triple?
But that's on his playing field.
Why are we
Odell's
tripping?
Not going to tell him, hey, Lil Wayne, come throw some balls to me. No, absolutely not.
When I see Brett Favre with Kenny Chesney and stuff,
You don't see him.
Man, I've seen how many times Kenny Chesney been on interviews.
Doing sit-down interviews.
Yes. First of all, I even DJed for Kenny Chesney. What was the problem there? NFL paid me, and they paid me a whole lot to DJ for people out there that don't even know what I DJ, and I didn't know what they were listening to, but we were there integrated together. So don't tell me this doesn't happen all the time. And that's when I was balling. When I wasn't balling, I could still DJ, but I ain't get those gigs. You know how the game go. Come on, Jason. You know how the game is.
Yeah, you done took the conversation somewhere.
Checkmate.
I got it online. I'll show you the pictures.
And you know what? You know why?
What?
You didn't get that third big contract.
Oh, God, here you go.
You start chasing a brand and DJing instead of focusing on football.
There it is, the record stadium. Not the injuries, the records.
Thank you, Greg.
The albums.
All right, welcome back to the show. All right, Marcellus, you know I can't stand social media land.
Off my lawn.
That's why we got our man Darnell Smith here, our social media manager, to tell us what's happening in them Twitter streets.
It's been crazy.
Crispy over a new haircut today or what?
I gotta keep it clean. Shout out to my man Chuck Taylor Barbershop out here, man.
You look crispy, but them helmets messing up the whole look.
Come on, dude.
Who are you?
The helmet, we struggling, but the helmets look good.
Oh, yeah, they struggling.
Wick. All right, what you got, Darnell?
Yeah, we're gonna start with yesterday's big story on Drew Brees, who broke Peyton Manning's all-time passing yards record on his long touchdown pass against the Redskins. But conspiracy theory Twitter was more than surprised by just how easy it looked. Future Hall of Famer Joe Thomas tweeted, sure nice of the Redskins defense to coordinate an 11-man nap on that pass play for Brees to break the NFL record. Reminds me of when Brett Favre ran into Michael Strahan to give him the sack record. Y'all think this record was a rigged job?
That's blasphemy.
Yeah.
To even remotely. No, it's not a rigged job. This is why Josh Norman got benched.
Yeah,
the Redskins don't know what the hell they doing. More important, though, to me, Marcellus, I want to ask you this. Future Hall of Famer Joe Thomas. We just throwing that out there, that title. Is Joe Thomas sure?
Oh, yeah, that's a wrap. That's a wrap. You seen him lately where he lost 200 pounds. And yeah. No, not that guy. But that guy, when he used to play, oh, it was a wrap. Yeah, anytime in the locker room, we used to always say six or more Pro Bowls, pretty much chalk it up, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. What did he make, 13?
But by performance.
By performance. Like I told you before about voting for NFL linemen in terms of Pro Bowls and Hall of Fame. A lot of it gets lost in your name, but you have to earn that name first. And he did.
Yeah, okay.
He did. Right. So that said, you can't fight Drew Brees on that night. That's Monday Night Football on the road, Bourbon Street, Superdome, and it's Drew Brees night. Just an avalanche of issues. They couldn't deal with that. That wasn't a rig job, though.
Not a rig job.
No, no. All
right. What's next right now?
All right, elsewhere in that game, New Orleans receiver Michael Thomas and Washington corner Josh Norman faced off all night. But once Norman got benched, the biggest fireworks came afterwards on Twitter. A lot of the tweets got deleted, but basically Thomas said he punked Norman all night and called him washed up. And Norman called Thomas a clown who did nothing but block. Thomas kept it off by saying, you corny for deleting your tweets. We grown men, walk it like you're talking. Goofball, con artist. This is my favorite part, when we find out you not who you say you are. Y'all like this Twitter beef?
I don't like it.
You don't?
All right, man.
This one went out of bounds?
What? It didn't go out of bounds, but it just seems unbecoming of two guys that play at a high level, or at least one guy that still plays at a high level, one guy that used to.
Right. I like it. You know why I like it? They didn't go out of bounds. They kept it on the field, but they gave us like the mic'd up version like 3 hours later. We were like, oh, this is what you guys are really saying on the field. But sports is sold through story and storyline. So what happened when Odell went at it with Josh Norman? Whenever the Giants were playing the Panthers, we had to watch. So now this is going to just be a little more of a must-see event to see Josh Norman try to get his name back for Mike Thomas.
Do you buy this? Is this authentic beef or is this two guys trying to build their Twitter following?
It's 70-30. It's real beef because I'm not picking everybody on the field to talk this to. But then it's like, I'm going to keep going in on you. Clout chasing in a way. Josh Norman has a bigger name, even though Michael Thomas has a bigger game. So Michael Thomas is like, let's keep this going because I'm starting to steal some of that love that used to be yours.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yes, last thing from that game. I want to hear y'all thoughts on Alvin Kamara, who sported a Colin Kaepernick jersey and a Make Africa Home Again hat in the locker room, leading Yahoo Sports to tweet, Kamara making a strong statement with his post-game fit. Are you guys surprised Kamara's wearing this look?
Listen, I need a translation on what is the strong statement being made. I get the Kaepernick jersey.
Yeah.
He's saying, I'm with Cap. I'm not sure if I understand the hat, Make Africa Home Again.
Yeah, everything's off to Make America Great Again. So Make Tiger Great Again. That worked. This one is Make Africa Home Again. I mean, if you're going to go all in on Cap, let's finish the deal to the original statements of why are we here in the first place. I guess that's where he's going with that. But
yeah, because I would argue that Cap and Alvin Kamara could actually move to Africa quite comfortably if they want to. They got the money to do it.
Yeah.
And if it's so bad over here in America, I'm sure the AFL, the African American Football League, would love to have Alvin Kamara.
AFL's Arena Football.
Oh, Arena Football.
I'm sure they'd
love to have him over there. So
yeah, you know, it's weird. I played in the day when we tried to make these statements, and it didn't get this kind of glorification. Like, we used to wear all kinds of I remember I got a fine one time pregame. I wore a cutoff shirt for just a cause. Let's just say that it's not on media, so you got to check it out.
All right, let's go finally to a new element we're adding, Marcellus.
Oh, that's what we
want to look around the network a little
bit. We're going to kick the helmets off the table? Yeah. What's this?
Yes, sir. You know, when I go home all day, I'm watching our FS1 show, so one thing I noticed from our own Colin Cowherd took a shot at Aaron Rodgers. Take a listen to this.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I know we love Aaron Rodgers, and I know he's handsome and cool, and he's got a better razor than Andrew Luck. I get that. I mean, I get that. But, you know, it's funny who we choose to defend and who we choose to hammer. Aaron Rodgers has had a Mardi Gras of fun. He's had a surplus of talent compared to Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck is still looking for his first decent offensive lineman. He's still looking for his first 7 years, no Pro Bowl offensive lineman. Aaron's had four.
Mm. Y'all agree with Colin that Rodgers deserves more criticism than Luck?
I've dealt with Cal Herd for a long time. He loves Andrew Luck, loves him, and looks for any way possible to defend him. I'm not sure I can go here with him, though, that somehow Aaron Rodgers, who has a Super Bowl, needs to be treated the way Andrew Luck is, who doesn't have a Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're using facts to try to support a theory instead of what the theory is to support the facts. The facts is this. Andrew Luck's not even close to Aaron Rodgers. No one ever is sitting there saying, other than those who theorized, that he will be better than Aaron Rodgers. It's still saying Andrew Luck's in that conversation, is of that echelon. We can't go there. This is bad because Aaron Rodgers does deserve more criticism than he gets because he at times is divisive, at times is not working well with others. But Andrew Luck just nearly needs to get destroyed in terms of what we thought he was and rebuilt to what he is, which is damn good, but not this all-time great in the making. It's not happening.
This reminds me, because, I mean, Cowherd loves Andrew Luck.
I just noticed.
And it reminds me, I had a love affair and still do with Jeff George because we grew up together. Mm. And there's nothing he could do on the football field that I couldn't defend.
Mm.
There's no excuse I wouldn't make for any shortcoming that he had.
Or could defend.
Yeah, and so that still goes on to this day. But, you know, I'm going to have a word with Cowherd about this.
That one was,
When we talk tonight, I'm going to say, hey, man, you're doing a little too much.
Yeah, you wedged that one in there. Sometimes we force it. I get it. I love the Clippers, and I'm going to try and make it argument every time I can to get them boys right.
All right, thank you, Darnell. Great job. All right, today we're talking about Drew Brees, who broke Peyton Manning's all-time passing yards record last night in a blowout win over the Redskins. Brees has one of the highest ratings I've ever given so far. I think he has the highest rating I've ever given. 93. Definitely a GOAT.
You ain't lying.
24 in job performance, 22 in all-time greatness, 24 in character, 23 in authenticity. a 93 total.
Yeah, hard to pick any issues with this, man. 93 total, I thought was a little low. Maybe because of me knowing Drew Brees from day one and going to his wedding and shout out to it, but my dog, 96. I mean, this dude is amazing every single level. There is one thing about Drew Brees that is out there. I don't know if everyone is giving it enough attention.
I didn't know this till you mentioned this.
Yeah, Drew Brees had to sue his jeweler because he purchased over $15 million of jewelry over the years, and it got appraised recently for only $9 million. So Drew wants $6 million back. Huh? Where they
Brees
do that at?
Drew Brees has $15 million worth of ice.
Drew Brees got gator boots. When I read
this. Is he a hot boy? Bling, bling. I mean, is he cash money? Is Birdman involved?
Talking about not living up to the stereotype, I was like, all right, go ahead, Drew. Like, way to show you down with all types and all things. But that kind of caught me off guard, so I couldn't give him a perfect score.
I'm going to make an emergency change and just go down to a 92, still a GOAT.
Yeah.
But I'm going to knock him a point on authenticity down to a 22 now because that seems all $15 million worth of jewelry. I mean,
for every player that we clown, talking about all the bling and all the jewelry they got, maybe $1 million, maybe, and that's doing too much. 15?
Seriously, when I hear this, I was like, are there pictures of Drew Brees and Jamarcus Russell somewhere kicking it at a club?
On Mardi Gras. Like his Mardi Gras beads are real. Like, real. He bought a diamond. One diamond was $8 million by itself. Drew got it in, bro.
Drew loves his wife. That's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like.
He is iced out.